Well, from my home to your home, I want to welcome you to Genesis Church Online. We're so glad that you're gathered here today. It's an honor and privilege to have you. And if you're watching on a social media platform, maybe like Facebook, will you take a moment and share with us in the chat box where you're watching from? And also, would you mind just simply sharing this service? It's amazing what can happen whenever we encourage others to take their next step with Jesus. I was talking to someone last week who shared the service. They threw a watch party and they had 20 people who gathered with them, one of which said, "Do you mind if we just keep gathering together? I have a lot of questions about my faith and I'm hoping you can help." So if you're tuning in today and you have this passionate relationship with Jesus, you are welcome. If you are struggling to trust God, you are welcome here. And if you're someone who's just exploring matters of faith, you don't have a relationship with God, but you're interested to see what that would look like, well, you're welcome. We are a church where everyone's welcome, nobody's perfect, and anything's possible. And today we're going to continue our series, The Promise of Heaven. So if you have a Bible with you, I want to invite you to make your way over to Revelation chapter 15. And as you're making your way over there, I have a confession for you. I have realized in my life that I am navigationally challenged. In other words, I can hardly go to the grocery store without my app on my phone for directions. And I've lived in several places, and I have been in places long enough, you would think I know exactly where I'm going, but I'm telling you, I still struggle with getting from point A to point B, and I don't think I'm alone. Well, during this pandemic, the stay-at-home orders, I found myself over at a beautiful lake called Lake Muriel, and I found myself just sitting and soaking in and watching all that is going on. And there are so many birds at this lake. I've seen pelicans, I have seen different cardinals and mallard ducks and all kinds of birds. I've even seen an eagle before at this lake. And it got me thinking about how fascinating birds are. And I don't know if you know this or not, that there's a bird called the Manx shearwater. And it's a bird that nests off the coast of Wales. And some scientists captured a few of these birds and they put these homing devices on them. They took them out of their natural habitat and they put them all across the world. And what they found is these birds, no matter where they put them, in a period of 12 days, return back to the coast of Wales. One of those birds was actually put in Boston, and they flew 250 miles a day until they reached the coast of Wales. It's just fascinating. There's another bird. It's called the golden plover, which is native to the island of Hawaii. And every summer, they leave Hawaii. Why anyone would leave Hawaii, I don't know. But they travel to this island that is over 1,000 miles away. And then they lay eggs and the birds actually leave. And so when the birds are hatched, there's no one around. What's fascinating is these birds who've never been to Hawaii, have no one around to show them, all are able to make their way back to Hawaii over 1,000 miles to a place they've never been. It's absolutely amazing. They have this unique homing instinct to a place they've never been. Now, I think this is so important and so significant because I believe God has placed within each one of us a purposeful instinct, a desire, a soul longing for more than this life. I think we have a longing for eternity. The wisest man who ever lived, Solomon, put it this way. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3, he's made everything beautiful in its time. He's also set eternity in the human heart. That we have this longing, this soul longing that is actually purposely put there by a creator to long for eternity, to long for heaven. You could even say that we are homesick for heaven. Now, it's no secret. We work through this. There's a lot of people who believe in heaven. And maybe you are gathering with us right now and you believe in heaven. Roughly 70% of the people who were a part of a recent survey said, "I believe in heaven." And then those who were surveyed that did not believe in heaven, many of them secretly say, "I hope heaven exists." There's a lot of mutual agreement that there is a heaven. Now, what it looks like, there's a lot of disagreement there. In that same survey, 20% think that heaven is like a garden. 20% think heaven is like a city. And 30% say we have no idea what it's like. But as we learned last week, and we began this series, that one thing we can know is that heaven is a real place. It's so intriguing to me that Jesus, who is talking to his closest disciples, they're going through an immense time of struggle, some discouragement. Jesus has shared with them that he no longer will be with them physically, and they are grieving. I think we can all relate to grieving on some level right now. For some of us, we are entering into the summertime really soon, and we had all these dreams and aspirations, and we're grieving because they're not going to turn out how we thought they would. For some of us, we've received news we didn't want to receive, and we are grieving. Now, here's what Jesus has to say to them. John chapter 14, verse 3. I go and prepare a place for you. I will come back and take you to be with me, that you may also be where I am. Notice Jesus didn't say, I'm going to prepare a state of mind for you. Heaven is not a state of mind. Jesus didn't say, I'm going to prepare a really wonderful idea for you. Heaven is not some idea. Heaven is a real place, a real place. In so many ways, we often think about earth imitating heaven, that whenever we look at earth, we can see the hints of heaven, the fingerprints of God. C.S. Lewis, who is the author of The Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe from England, a philosopher, he wrote many great books. This is one of the things that he wrote. If I find myself with desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. All the things that have ever been deeply displayed in my soul have been hints of heaven. That's so powerful. And I remind you, you know what makes heaven so amazing? What makes heaven so incredible? What makes heaven so wonderful is the unrestricted presence of God. That's what makes heaven so amazing. No more brokenness and complete restoration with God, who is a restorer. No more ambulances, no more urgent cares, no more hospitals, no more pharmacies, no more unwanted news. Being in the presence of God, receiving restoration with the God who is a restorer. Now, I know we have a lot of questions about heaven, and we're trying to take them one at a time. And at the end of this series, we're going to answer a few questions that you have shared with us. But today, here's what I want to do. I want to work through this question, which I think is an important one. What will we do in heaven? And I think this comes from a place that dreams of heaven, like that's portrayed in many commercials, that heaven is a place of incredible apathy, that we have overweight angels sitting with harps, learning to play the harp like an expert, and it just seems so overwhelmingly boring. And we think about that and we shudder. And I got good news for you. That is not the biblical picture of heaven. Heaven is not a place of apathy. Heaven is a place of activity. So let me just share a few of those activities that we know will take place in heaven. The first is this, that we will worship God through singing. And by the way, this is why you were created. You were created to worship God. There is nothing that will ever fully fulfill your soul like worshiping God. It's why you were created. And we get to worship God through singing. Worship is our response to the worthiness of God. And one of those ways is singing. Have you ever thought about why you have a voice? Well, we have a voice to communicate, sure, but we also have a voice to proclaim the goodness, the worthiness of God. And we get to do that in so many ways, like singing. Now, I can't prove this, but there's my theory. I think God, who's a restorer, is going to restore not just our bodies, but our voices. And I think heaven is going to be full of amazing, incredible music. And if you've struggled to sing on earth, you will not struggle to sing in heaven. You know, it's not been long ago for Easter, Andrew Bocelli had this concert of hope an extraordinary voice, and within 14 days, 40 million people watched it. I just imagine heaven as this place of incredible, incredible music. Again, I can't prove it, but in Revelation chapter 15, remember, this is written by John, who gets this privilege of seeing into eternity. And this is after the complete victory of the enemy is established. We find these words. Revelation chapter 15, verse 3. They sang the song of God's servant Moses of the Lamb. Great and marvelous are your deeds, Lord God Almighty. Just and true are your ways, King of the nations. Who will fear you? Lord, bring glory to your name, for you alone are holy. All nations will come and worship before you, for your righteous acts have been revealed. It's an incredible thought to realize that not everything that God is doing and has done has yet to be revealed, but when it does, we will be spurred on to worship. And when we worship through singing, we war against fear, we war against doubt, we war against insecurity, we war against the enemy, and we feed our faith. We feed our faith in the goodness and grace of God. And God alone is worshiped. And we were created to be people who worshiped our Creator. Now I know, when I think about this side of eternity here on earth, the truth is a lot of us, we're not always in the mood to sing. Maybe we're struggling for one reason or another in our life. Maybe it's been a difficult last hour. Maybe we're tired. I don't think this will be the case in heaven. I think heaven will be distraction-free, and therefore we will freely and fully worship. I have heard a lot of people talk about different forms of worship, and I think one of our struggles in the here and now, if I can be completely honest, is we tend to be consumers, and we tend to be more about critiquing than entering into heartfelt worship. I can't tell you how many times I've heard things like, well, it's not loud enough. It needs to be louder. It's too loud for my ears. They don't play that song like Hillsong does. I don't really like that rendition. I don't really appreciate the way they're expressing in worship. And I could go on and on and on and on. And we can become consumers, and we can become people who critique and miss out on worshiping God. I remember interacting with a seasoned follower of Jesus. I was so encouraged by their attitude. I watched them sing hymns poorly done like Amazing Grace, and then raise their hands to songs like Good, Good Father. And I remember asking them, so tell me, how in the world do you have this incredible attitude in worship? And they said to me, I learned a long time ago to worship God, whether it was classical or traditional or contemporary, whether it was poorly sung or really well done. I learned to worship God just in case I get to heaven and they aren't singing my song, I can worship God anyway. Now that is the attitude of worship. And in eternity, in heaven, the truth and beautiful matter is that we are completely restored without distractions, without cell phone interruptions, without jobs weighing on us in unhealthy ways. I think this is why there's some earthly encouragement from the writer of Hebrews in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 15. Through Jesus, therefore, let us continually offer to God a sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that openly profess his name. And can I just encourage you? I know we're talking about the promise of heaven, but can I talk to us about the reality of earth? If you're watching this, you're a follower of Jesus, I want to challenge you. I want to challenge you over this next year to cultivate a passionate heart of worshiping God, not because you're singing about God, but because you're singing to God. And you're not worried about the people around you as much as you're worried about freely worshiping God, who's worthy of all of our worship. Let's not miss that opportunity. And so we will worship through singing. And secondly, we will work for God through serving. We're in Revelation 15. If you'll make your way over to Revelation chapter 7. And as you're making your way over to Revelation chapter 7, I remind you that Revelation is both literal symbolic. There are metaphors attached, and we do our best to interpret, but I want you to see something here. Revelation chapter 7, verse 13. Then one of the elders asked me, "These in white robes, who are they, and where do they come from?" And I answered, "Sir, you know." And he said, "These are the ones who have come out of the great tribulation. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore, they are before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will shelter them with his presence." This is an instance, a glimpse into heaven where the activity that's on display is serving God. That there are clear tasks and there are clear assignments. Now, later on, we will look at the new heaven and new earth in a different message. And inside of there, I think you will see some clarity around roles. But I think it's important to clarify that heaven is not just a resting place with restoration. Heaven is also a place where we serve God, where we work for God. There's so much that's unclear, but I want to make sure that I stress this. What is really clear is that we will work for Jesus. I recently was watching House Hunters International with my wife. It's something we love to do. And someone who was on that show, they were moving from Ohio to the country of Panama because they couldn't stand their work. They didn't like the people they worked with. And I thought, how often is it that we struggle? We struggle with those we work with. We struggle with who we work for. And I think the work that we are connected to in heaven is work that's done without sin and without brokenness. And I want you to see this. We will work in heaven to Jesus, who is ultimately the risen King and who is in charge. When we think about Easter, it's so easy to celebrate that the tomb is empty. But what's also worth celebrating is that the throne is filled. And it's filled with Jesus, who is in charge, who is the risen King, who we get to worship in heaven. Imagine a grand restoration project where Jesus is in charge. One of my favorite pictures is this glimpse at the very end of Revelation. It's in Revelation chapter 22. It says, "Down the middle of the great street of the city, on each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations." Can you imagine being enlisted into God's grand restoration project that is for the healing of the nations? I don't know exactly what it'll look like, but I think it's filled with hope. And this is why followers of Jesus need to know that death is not an ending, but ultimately a new beginning. And you could look at this temporary season that we are in, where we have stay-at-home orders, and you can know that this season will pass, and it'll pass sooner than we may think. And the truth is, our life here on earth is the same way. And I think this is the reason why the Apostle Paul wrote in Colossians chapter 3, verse 2, "Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things." So what will we do in heaven? What's our activities? Well, we know that we'll sing, and we know that we will serve. And lastly, we will enjoy God's gift of community together. Just curious, how many of you love food? I love food, and the problem is food loves me back a little too much. I want you to see this in Revelation chapter 19. I can't prove it, but another one of my theories is food absolutely has no calories in heaven. Revelation chapter 19, verse 9, I just want to make this observation. "Then the angel said to me, 'Write this, blessed are those who are invited to the wedding supper of the Lamb.'" And he added, "These are the true words of God." Did you notice, by the way, for all those from the South, it says supper and not dinner. I lived on the East Coast and the West Coast, and it was dinner. But in the South, it is so common to hear the word supper. And the idea is that you are gathering for a meal. What's the best place you've ever shared a meal at? Where was it? I was thinking back to that just this past week, and I remember it was in Seattle, Washington, the Metropolitan Grill, and my wife's brother actually paid for it, so it was free, And I'll be honest, I think that's what made that steak even better. It's very interesting. You go over to Matthew chapter 8, verse 11. I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, in the kingdom of heaven. I mean, can you imagine sitting at the table and eavesdropping in on some of your heroes of faith? Can you imagine asking Moses, Moses, would you mind filling up my glass? Paul, would you pass the plate? Lot, would you pass the salt? Well, okay, okay, too soon. That was a horrible attempt at humor, by the way. But imagine getting to talk to Enoch about walking with God and being no more. Imagine getting to talk to Mary about serving Jesus, or Noah about the ark. Now imagine the privilege of being reunited with loved ones and friends. And there's a lot of questions surrounding this. We'll dive into this later. But Peter Kreft has echoed a question that's heard repeatedly. Will we recognize our friends in heaven? I love what he says. In fact, only in heaven will we know our friends from within. Randy Alcorn said, heaven won't be without families. What will be one big family? I don't know. I just imagine this. And again, I can't tell you that it's completely accurate, but my son, who's two, he goes around our house now and he says, this. And that's his way of asking about things. This, oh, that's a couch. This, that's a car. This, that's a glass. This, that's our dog. But I can imagine people who have gone before us. I can imagine going up and saying, what is this? And can you tell me about this? And can you tell me about this? Remember, heaven is a real place that has this unique feeling of home, and it's designed with joy and pleasure in mind. If you notice, whenever you look through the letter of Revelation, you find that heaven has celebrations and music and songs and applause and festivals and festivities. In other words, it's a place full of lasting joy with God at the center. It's been a few years back, but there was a group called Audio Adrenaline, and they wrote a song really after John chapter 14 called Big House. And here's the words. It's a big house, a big, big house with lots and lots of room and a big, big table with lots and lots of food and a big, big yard where we can play football. It's a big, big house. It's my Father's house. And so there's singing and there's festivities and there's feasting, but the main event is the very presence of God. The main event is Jesus himself. D.L. Moody wrote, it's not the jewel walls and pearly gates that are going to make heaven attractive. It's being with God. And we long for it. We have a homing instinct created purposefully by God. So what will we do in heaven? Well, I can tell you this, it won't be a place of apathy. It'll be a place of activity. And we will worship through singing. We will work and serve Jesus. And we will gather together in community with God at the center. That's what we'll do in heaven. Will you pray with me? And I want to take a moment simply to pray for us, that our curiosity about heaven would increase, that our joy would increase, and that we'd be people who live in the here and now in light of eternity, and not try to get out of earth to get to heaven, but rather to see heaven impact earth, just like Jesus prayed. So let me pray for you. God, I'm so grateful that we can gather together. I'm so grateful that we can worship together. I'm so thankful for your word, and I'm so thankful for your son. Jesus, thank you for your life, death, and resurrection, your victory over sin. Thank you that you are the restorer and you are the king. And I pray, as we move out throughout this day and into a new week, that we will do so filled with the Spirit of God, having a tremendous joy and a heavenly vision. In the name of Jesus, I pray, amen. I want to thank you so much for gathering with us today. And I want to share just a few things. If you'd like to talk with someone and maybe take your next step with Jesus, you'd like to get connected in a small group, or you'd like to find out more information and you have questions, you can simply go to genesisal.com/connect. And we will do our best to answer those questions, pray for you, and help you get connected. I'd love to invite you to be a part of our generosity team. I am so thankful and so thrilled at the faithfulness and generosity of so many people in our church and really all across the U.S. And I want to say thank you so much. It's your gifts that allow us to feed the front lines. And we were able to feed in urgent care recently. We're working on feeding the hospital. And we have some other things that you'll hear about next week. But if you'd like to be a part of our generosity team, you can mail in your gift, you can text to give, or you can give safe and secure online. Just go to genesisal.com/give and you'll find out all the information you need. Now this Thursday, my wife and I are gonna take time for a Thursday night encouragement, and we'd love to have you join us. It's only 30 minutes on Facebook Live, our church's Facebook Live, from 8:30 to 9 o'clock. Thank you so much for gathering with us here at Genesis Church.